Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 160, with Laura Dockrell. But before we get into it, boy, have I got a lot to chat to you guys about. My word, this might be a longer intro than usual. Where to begin? The most important bit, this Saturday, we've got my We Are Liz's club night at the book club in Hoxton. And it's my birthday, my birthday's in a couple of weeks, but it's the nearest one to my birthday, so we're having it as my birthday celebrations. So that's one reason that we'd love you all to come down and hang out, have a drink, have a dance, have a bit of fun. Another reason is we've got the amazing Sam Redmore and John Kennedy, Mr. XFM Radio X John Kennedy, who launched my whole career. Had to get him down for the birthday special. He'll be DJing. I'll be DJing. DJ Destruction, Chris and Stu from the Drunk Cast and Hardcore Listing. We'll get onto that. And we'll be DJing. But the cool thing that we're doing that's extra special is... So we've been doing this club night for 5 years now. And from the start, I'll be there all night and I'll chat to people and we'll have photos and sign stuff. But where the club night's got busier and busier and busier... In the last year or so, I've had a lot of people messaging me after the night saying I had a great time, but I didn't get a chance to say hello or to have a photo or whatever. So what we thought we'd do, so we start charging from 9 p.m. It's a fiver. But what we thought we'd do is, it's free before 9. So what we're doing, I'm stumbling over explaining this. They've got a photo booth in the basement at the book club. So we thought, well, anyone who wants to get there at 8, which is before we start charging, can come and have a photo booth session with us. So Stu will be DJing at the time, but I'll jump in a photo booth with any of you that wants to. We get some pictures. I'll sign them at any point throughout the night. Obviously, still, I'll chat to everyone throughout the night. This is an idea to make it a bit more personal and more engaging and interactive. So come down to that. It's at the book club on Saturday, the 22nd of July. Free before 9, £5 after 9. If you get in there later, sling your name over to info@thetrashsociety.com, because the queues get a bit insane and it queues round the corner, and that'll get you on the queue jump list, which still has a bit of a queue, but yeah, that's that. Anyway, that's enough of that, isn't it? I should mention the Drunk Cast. My word, that's a lot of people are saying it's their favourite one ever. So it seems like it's the most popular Drunk Cast. Part one, tons of just, you know, us catching up. Part two is the one that seems... Or part three's got a bit legendary because of how drunk Chris got. But part two is the one that seems to have got the most reaction, because it basically consisted of three stories... One from Stu and two from me. And I had them noted on my notes simply under the titles A Holiday from Hell, Shitty Shower, and Ball Bag Carpaccio. So you might want to go and listen to that. That's episode 2 of the Drunk Cast, of this most recent one, Drunk Cast 8. And then episode 3, we just get drunker than ever. And Stu walks out. Chris... I think talks the most nonsense he's ever talked. If you saw the video we put up, it was great. If you haven't, please go and watch that. I'm so pleased with that. Basically, we did a Facebook Live video before and after. And by chance, I've edited it together, because by chance in the before, Chris is there going, oh yeah, I've not drunk in a while. So, and we're in a lovely new studio. So I don't know how this will end for me. And then I edit to the Facebook Live after, where Stu's walked out and Chris is drunk, wearing a riot helmet. I won't give too many spoilers, but he trashes the place a little bit. So yeah, check those out. Drunk Cast Part 1 and 2 and 3. What else should I mention? Oh, this is exciting. I got a lot of love. We did a Destiny 2 special a couple of weeks back. I got a lot of love for that. So that was nice. And what me and... You may know that when I had Dan Lissac on, I guess that was episode 100, right? On episode 100, he does a lot of gaming, and he's big in the gaming world. He's got a verified Twitch verified, partnered, something. He's got a good Twitch account. So yeah, what we've decided is when the beta of the Destiny 2 game comes out of this week, I think it drops on Tuesday. Or maybe Wednesday. No, it's on Friday. It drops on Friday. We're going to do a thing where you can go online and join a team with me and Dan to go and battle people and do Destiny 2 type stuff. So check that out. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think the beta is possibly free. I should know more information. I'm not a businessman here. But the beta is basically the trying out of it. So yeah, there'll be information on our social media on that. But on Friday, I think we're looking at trying to do it at 6 p.m. On PlayStation. You'll be able to come online and join and team up with me and Dan Lesac and go and do some raids and stuff. I'm not sure if we're going to be doing strikes or raids or what, but yeah, come along. What else am I meant to go into? Speech Development Records. This podcast is brought to you by Speech Development Records, and we've got our insanely popular sunglasses back in stock. We did these sunglasses that have the Speech Development Records slogan of "We may not be for you, and that's fine." We did them. We did a batch beginning of June, and they sold out in a week. So I rushed a second batch, and they sold out in 2 days. So I've rushed a third batch, and they're currently in stock at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. So go and check them out. There's also podcast merch there. There's the Distraction Pieces book, Team 3W mugs, which is the Distraction Pieces elite team, the welcome, welcome, welcome team. So yeah, check all of that out at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Is that everything? I can probably get onto the podcast now. It's with Laura Dockrill. In fact, we got a Doc to Doc week. So this week is Laura Dockrill and next week is Doc Brown. So, Laura I've known for ages and she's so amazing. I'm so pleased to have her on. I won't go into too much detail, but we used to know each other well back in the day when we were doing gigs. Me, her, Kate Nash, Adele, Peggy Sue and the Pirates, Stuart James and a load of others. In fact, I should mention as well, if you've got Netflix and you've not watched Glow yet, check Glow out. It's with Kate Nash. It's fantastic. It's amazing. I'll get Kate on at some point. Schedules and that. In fact, I've got some good ones lined up if schedules match up. There's some good surprises. We've got some good people in town at the moment. So we'll see how that all goes. Anyway, on with the podcast. I'll be back at the end to give you a few more bits of information. So yeah, this is episode 160 with Laura Dockrill. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. We were just saying how the root of everything when we met was a real mixture of art forms, like from people there on the fashion side of things to the literature side to the music side to the poetry side. But the theme always seemed to be that theatricality and entertainment.
Completely. We're on a landscape of theatre. I remember seeing you always had props. You always had a big periodic table and a costume, always a hat, always
hats
a bit,
and stuff.
And I feel like we all stemmed from theatre. I met all these people we're talking about at the Brit School and performance and show. But I feel like it's like there was a sense of, as you were saying, which I don't think really exists as much anymore. Just a sense of open mindedness to any craft, and we were allowed to trespass into each other's worlds and welcome each other. And that's what massive support network without even
completely
realizing.
It's the welcoming and openness. I should mention I'm joined by Laura Dockrill here, as I knew in the day as Dockers MC, but now you're a grown up and you've got books and stuff. But yeah, I think that was the key, because I remember when I started going to spoken word gigs, I was turned off from the whole scene really quickly, because it was either a load of people that were all very expensively educated and posh at RADA events and stuff like that, or it was old punks who all hate Thatcher. And it was like, cool, I'm not a fan of her either, but she's been gone for a long while. Like, what are we doing here? So, and that it was weird to then find the home for my spoken word at events that weren't particularly spoken word, that were art and fashion. I always remember that a lot of the events that you were at, you'd do a gallery or your work would be on sale, yeah. And you'd also be doing poetry.
Yeah.
And Gemma Carney, who's been on in the past, will be doing artistic design and planning it all out.
We all believed that we had to be unique, and that was part of the creatures that we were, was that we had to look like a species of some kind, which was that we were going to be oddballs, a bit like those toys that come out under the bed in Toy Story in Sid's room.
Completely. And all just come together.
And we've all got a little talent.
But that was it. It was that thing, because these days I think you need to, and you see it with club nights a lot, for example. It has to be, oh, this is an R&B night, or this or that. Whereas those nights were always... Just
a collage,
come.
Yeah.
Just come, it'll just work come, out, and there'll work. Be Garage being played, and then Kate Nash will be on, and then I'll be on, and Jack Pignatti and all this.
But you did a really good job of blending forms, I feel like. Even at that time, I think what you were doing was, it was a mixture of everything. It felt, at times it was kind of like a seminar, more a seminar of there are no rules to art, really, which we were kind of drinking in that way, but yet you could dance to it as well. Yeah. And
again, I think that was the key of everyone, was that there wasn't anyone going up there and going, I'm an artist, here's my performance, accept it. It was going, oh, what do these people want? Mm-hmm. If Kate was doing a set, she'd change it to more up-tempo or have more electronic beats if it felt right. Yeah, and we'd all collaborate.
We'd all just jump on.
We'd do what we want. And that worked nicely. There was that owing to the audience as such. If they've paid, then we want to try and give them something that they want, rather than go, you're here, I'm now going to share my art with you for half an hour, if you enjoy it or not. Yeah. It's like, no.
We don't care if you enjoy it or not, it's happening.
You've got to enjoy it. It's like, it was
different
fun.
Every time, and that's what I think made it so, because we loved it as well, it was good fun. It was just, the stage was a playground for us, we were that time, so it was amazing.
And at that point as well, you, as said, your art was a massive part of it, and I got a message off my mum this morning to show
I love your mum.
The piece of art that she bought from back in the day that's still hanging up in her house. And she sent a message to say it makes her smile every day and makes sense. But it was someone in their pyjamas walking a rabbit. And it says, I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't the faintest idea what is going on. And my mum, I remember her buying that in huge excitement, because as a kid, she had a pet hare. And she'd take it for a walk on a lead in South London, not far from where we are now. And she always told the story because she found it hilarious. The groundskeeper, there were signs everywhere in this park that said no dogs. And the groundskeeper would always rush over and then go, oh.
That's not a dog.
And not sure what could be said, because it was a hare on a lead.
The hare's name? Do you know?
I don't know.
You've got to ask her.
But yeah, it worked perfectly. She came to this event and that was hanging on the wall. And she's very open about the fact that she's never really become an adult and hasn't got a clue what's going on in the world.
It's funny, you draw something like that and you think, will anybody ever like this? Yeah. And then there's one person in the world who also hasn't got the idea what's going on and has a hair.
That picture made me then hunt out a screenshot I did, which I'm going to post at some point on Instagram again, because just to illustrate, my mum's still not having a clue what's going on. I've just got this, a screenshot that's a WhatsApp group, and it says, Mum has started the WhatsApp group, boys, and Mum has added you, and Mum has added my brother Ian, and then it says, Mum has left the group.
So basically,
because she didn't have a clue how it worked, and she was like, I've started this group, all right, I've left the group, and me and my brother are just commenting underneath going, okay, that was weird.
That happened.
But yes, so what was the drive at that point? Did you think, right, or did you even have, it's going to sound odd, but did you even have a focus? Was it, I'm going to do drawings, or was it, I'm going to do poetry? Because the drawings would always have some writing with them, so they'd generally be part of it.
I just felt completely the same as you, compelled by the scene that was happening, and thought, I just need to do something. I thought, I see them now, and I go to so many schools. I mean, I go to schools every single week. I've met hundreds of kids, and you could be that kid in the room that you think, when I'm older, I'm going to be this, and I'm going to own the Walt Disney Palace, and I'm going to be I'm going to have £1 million, and then that means I'm not going to just buy a one-bedroom flat in West Norwood. Yeah. I'm going to be able to buy.
Yeah.
And you all these big dreams, and then suddenly you realise, if you're, I don't do something quick, I'm going to get lost in the shuffle, and
yeah.
I'm not going to be all these things I want. So, I mean, the thing, what it takes is guts and confidence and some sort of, I don't know, mad bravado to yeah. kind of go, fuck, I've got to have a go at this.
I've got because something if I can don't... offer.
Yeah, I'm going to just get forgotten. So I think we were all just throwing stuff out there, testing, and it was a complete laboratory every time any of us did a show. It yeah. was an experiment. Yeah. We didn't know what was going to happen. But we thought, if we don't, we're going to get lost. So I mean, I never recognised myself as a poet. I knew I was obsessed with poetry, from abnormally obsessed from a really young age, fascinated by yeah. words and language from a really young age. But I didn't know, as you said, most poetry, as Simon Armitage always says, most people isolate poetry because most poetry isolates people.
Yeah.
And that's so true. I feel that's exactly how I felt. But then one day I started telling stories, and when once that happened, people started calling me a poet. I was like, you know what, okay, you call me that, that's fine, spoken word artist, you call yeah. me that, I'm just doing what I'm doing. And everything we do, Pip, you and I, and all of us, you mentioned loads of our friends' names, we're all just telling stories in a different platform, whether that's through a picture, there's a story in that picture yeah. you've just said, or through a film if you're acting, or yeah. through me writing a book. We're all just telling stories yeah. all the time, and how we illustrate those words, that canvas doesn't have to be a book or doesn't have to be a stage. We're just in dialogue and making conversation.
Completely. And it's what I've always loved about your poetry or storytelling, and Polar Bears and Kate Nash's songs and stuff like that, was that it always felt like a relatable story.
Mm.
Like I've always said about Polar Bear, that pretty much every poem he's ever written is about the Midlands when he was growing up.
I know.
Yet they're all completely individual and completely, like, he's not as someone who's got these poems on all these different subjects. It's all rooted in the same place, yet you feel that and you relate to that. And your
work
was always similar in that way, that it felt... I was getting an insight to an upbringing that was near to mine but not mine, and there was that familiar. I was like, I've not had anything like your life, but I can relate to all of it somehow. So
yeah, you almost almost intangible. You want to yeah. like, I understand, want to hold it. Oh, it was funny you saying about Polar Bear, because I remember saying, like, why do you talk about this Jessica chick all the time? Like, yeah. she's in all your poetry, and now I'm seeing you doing a theatre piece, and this Jessica girl, who's Jessica? And he just was like, don't know, made her up. I was like, wow, like, you just completely spun all your fans into this world.
Yeah.
I think you kind of, finally you're getting all this stuff off your chest, and it's just fiction.
Yeah.
And I just love that. I love it, because that's the imagination, incredible. Like, that's where we can grow everything. That's what we all live for.
Yeah. I always remember hearing, and it's not someone you'd generally relate to poetry, but I always remember reading an interview with Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day, and he was saying how he realised at one point that if he wrote fiction but wrote it in the first person, it was so much more relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with that. Like, Polar Bear will tell these stories. It is fiction, but it's based on things you've experienced, whatever else. But if you stand there and tell it as if it's a story, then people are like, all that more engaged, rather than there's this fictional person called John, he's done this and done that.
They feel
like
you're confessing,
yeah.
and then they care.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful therapy in that way, because it means that you can confess, but you're writing it as fiction, so it doesn't feel as if...
Do you know what I mean? Here's the real
joke on. That's it. You can write all your true emotions and experience, but it's like, oh, it's not true.
Exactly.
Kind of is, but it's not true. So what was your upbringing like? Like, where did you live and where were you?
Mayhem. I lived in Brixton. I grew up there with yeah. my brother and sister, my mum and dad. My parents were complete hustlers, which is how I've learned the trade. I've been grown up with yeah. the trade. So my mum at one point she broke a world record for fitting 21 girls in fishnet tights and stilettos into a mini.
Amazing.
She was a kissogram, and I think even when she was pregnant with me, she was still kissogramming.
Amazing.
And my dad was a prop man. He had a business called Prop Around the Clock.
Brilliant.
In a white transit van, and they were punks. So I was the first kid to be brought up amongst all them, the punks, and would spend all my kind of nights falling asleep on pub tables with leather jackets as blankets.
Yes.
And I just loved people. I loved adults. I'd love it that I'd go to parties with my mum and dad, and they'd set me up a little bed, and then some drunk woman would come and tell me all her boyfriend troubles, and I'd be like eight listening, thinking, people are amazing.
Yeah.
People are amazing.
Yeah.
You don't have to look far for inspiration, because it's right there. You just yeah, need to tune completely. Into it.
Yeah.
And obsessed with adults from a young age. And my brother and sister and I just had an absolute ball. I loved being a big sister. I loved having two little people to direct and to be in all my plays and stories. Could make them do basically anything for a promise of jelly tots that never came.
Yeah,
and,
I love it.
It was mental. I remember one person once described my house as having cats in the Frosties, because literally it'd be like, it was a jungle. There'd be like socks in the fruit bowl and it would be hysteria, which drove me completely up the wall. But I was used to not having money for months. My parents made that feel like a normality for us. And then when we had money, we'd just blow it all on Chinese takeaways and go to Spain and spend it all in a week.
Perfect.
And I'm used to that. And I do feel blessed for that, because at times when I was 14, I was angry. I'd rail against it and be like, why can't you just be normal? But now I love it.
Do you think kids suffer a little bit these days because of social media and the internet giving an awareness to lifestyles that aren't their own? Because I completely relate to that, how there's a point where I didn't grow up jealous of people with loads of money or this, because I didn't know about that. I was discussing with a friend yesterday, in fact, whose kid's 5 at the moment, and she was saying they were thinking of going to Florida and going to Disneyland and all that. Then they realised at that age, you take him to Thorpe Park, and he doesn't know there's any better than that. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't know there's an improvement. Or you take him to
pinnacle,
a local swimming pool, and he doesn't know there's any difference between that and the water parks of
America.
Don't
blow your load too soon,
exactly,
as a parent.
Exactly. So having that... But I think when we were kids, that went older and older, because you just weren't aware. Until someone took you to Disneyland or something like that, you didn't know that was an option, so you didn't have that comparison. Therefore, whatever you did have was great, whereas now it feels, because you can just see the world online so quickly, you can go, well, our caravan holiday's crap. It's like, no, our caravan holidays were amazing, because we didn't know that there was a better option. We thought caravan holidays were the pinnacle of holidays.
Completely. You're absolutely right. The other day I was at school and we were making these aliens, and we were like, you know that game where you like draw the hair, then you bend over
you
the paper
over,
and you pass it around, so at the end you get an alien that isn't yours, that everyone's made together. And we said, who am I? This kid unrolls his 7, he is. He unrolls his paper and he goes, my alien looks like Donald Trump. And I was like, do you know what? I don't want you to know who Donald Trump is.
Yeah.
I want you to still believe that, like, the world is flat and you know, you can turn sticks into horses.
Yeah.
I don't want you to know who Donald Trump is. They're so aware. This is a really scary time. It's like he's kind of turned into the ultimate, like, Disney villain that they can kind of boo, and which is good in some ways, because what angered me in my teens, I felt so, my parents grew up in such a bubble that I always felt really embarrassed when subjects like religion or politics came up. I almost felt like I don't know anything about this because my parents,
what are these things?
But now I'm so grateful for it, because I lived in the, and it's helped my work, it's aided me to be able to be a massive advocate of dreaming, which is what I believe in, and we should be entitled to dream. And actually that's what I love, standing in the queue of a post office and being somewhere else. But kids, they shouldn't know what contour is and what who's had a boob job or not.
Yeah.
It's too exposed. And absolutely right, I think that goes as little as, you know, that of anything, of like, you should believe if you've made a cake that is the best cake in the world, and you've done it.
It's having those comparisons. And again, it is a weird, not that we're going to spend the whole podcast talking about the internet and social media, but it is a weird world, because children will know who Trump is because of both the left and the right, or potentially more because of the left, because of that having to push that he's this evil person, which he 100% is. But again, it's like, do we need to push it that much so that everyone's aware of it? And
it's
and
just
similarly,
precious time when you don't have to think about it.
It becomes a trend online as well, which I think is negative for kids, of highlighting what we perceive to be bad. And let me explain that a little bit. If there's a kid who wants to be like a Kardashian, that might be okay. Do you know what I mean? So to then shame them for being that, again, it's
completely,
not personally for me, and I can see how it can be a negative, but I think people go, well, they're leading people up the wrong path. So equally, if you're shaming, because if they hadn't got so big, there'd be a small section of people who like them, a small section of people who like this look and that look, and so on and so forth. So to shame any look surely is a negative thing.
I agree.
When people are so kind of, they'll post them then pictures of Kim Kardashian on the beach where it does look very odd and very alien as such. But it's like, well, surely, again, I argued with someone on that and they were like, yeah, but they're a bad example for kids, blah, blah. It's like, but you're still having a go at someone for how they look.
And that's exactly
surely
what
that's
not
the negative example. That's as negative example as anything.
And actually, so much of the Trump hate comes from how he looks.
Yeah.
Again, it's not because yeah. of his politics, because the kids aren't engaged or being taught about yeah. that. They're just seeing someone who looks like they've been tanned well
yeah.
with
yeah.
Overly bleached hair yeah. that doesn't perhaps suit his wrinkles.
Yeah.
That's what they're seeing, and that gives them an enemy.
Yeah, and it's such a weird one, isn't it? Because as grown-ups...
That's not what we teach.
Yeah, it's not what we teach. But they're easy jokes to go to and things to laugh at. But we know the depth underneath as well.
Uh-huh.
So we know a further layer. Whereas all the kids will get is that one layer. It's like I had problems, or I had inner conflicts with my godchildren when they got to a certain age. Because I think swearing is fucking great. I think it's absolutely fine. I think it's part of language and development.
Yeah.
And I think I was listening to Joe Rogan talk about it, and he was saying he realised that he's open about swearing with his kids when they're at an age to understand when it's right and when it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a lot more sense to me. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't censor them, but I know at 4 or 5, they don't know the value of that word.
Yeah.
And if they know it as a naughty word, then they'll just say it a lot frivolously, which... removes the impact of it and the value of it. So,
also, a swear word gives them currency to get in trouble for things they don't even realise.
Yeah.
If you're too little and you're using these
and you don't understand
language,
it, yeah.
don't understand the power of it, you're just asking your kid to get detention, basically,
yeah.
and that's long for you as
you're
a parent.
You're going to get in trouble, yeah.
yeah.
Exactly. So it
but
makes
I
sense.
Think
but again,
it's brilliant too.
Yeah, it's a similar thing there, though. As said, it's fine for you and I to watch a clip of Trump stumbling or bumbling or looking like an idiot and go, look at that idiot. But because we know the more deeper reasons that underline evil and darkness, whereas a child, you're completely right. You encourage them to hate someone because they look funny. It's like, that's
not
positive ever. It's
absolutely
never a positive
not,
thing.
Especially not for a kid. So, yeah, that's the kind of, I guess that's what, yeah, that's the world we're in. But
yeah. So where did it go from sleeping on pub tables with... a leather jacket as your pillow to kind of finding your way into Brit school? And I think Brit school is something that gets misunderstood a lot, you know, because there was certainly a backlash of it being this posh thing. And there will be some people who go there who are from rich families mm-hmm. or showbiz families or whatever else. But there's a lot of, most of the people I've met from there come from working class backgrounds and just got to go to this performance based school.
When I went there, it was 10 years old. I was at a posh school for a little bit. I went to a private school. My parents were so sweet. I was the eldest. They gathered all the money they could get. I was living in a really small flat in Brixton. They pulled everything they had to send me to this good school and get me out and give me a good education. But it just didn't suit me. And I really... it was a fine school, but I struggled. And they didn't have any time for the arts or creativity. And I mean, when the sciences got split up to physics, biology and chemistry, I was like, are you joking? Already science as one is hell. Like, how am I going to understand this? So going to Brit school, basically a girl from my primary school, I saw her over the fence and she said, have you heard about this place called Brit school? Like, I'm going to go. Like, but she was at a Steiner school. We were backed into a Steiner school with sheep wandering around. They were wearing their own clothes.
Amazing.
And there was a baby and a 13-year-old all being best friends. And I was like, yeah, this Brit school place doesn't exist. All right, Emma, chill out. Anyway, I researched it. My mum said, all right, I was only 10 years old. And she was like, how am I meant to trust this place? It just sounds like somewhere in the middle of Croydon, you know, this building. And she went, you can apply, but you have to do everything yourself, thinking she's not going to get her shit together and do this. I got my pitch taken to the little chemist, little sent off the application form, took my mum around. And there was nothing. I mean, I'm talking like the rooms are literally... It looks like a building that's just was made derelict overnight. The props are like broken broomsticks. It's just carpet, rooms, black walls, and basically an empty canvas, a playground to do whatever you wanted. And my mum just thought, this is right. And that changed my life. That school, everyone thinks it's this posh kind of fame, you know, over the top. Yeah, there are those people, but actually I think it's giving all the people a chance that wouldn't have if they didn't have money. You know, I would never have been able to go to afford a proper performing arts school.
And it's the freedom and openness to acknowledge that there are jobs in the arts, which is something that's overlooked in schools hugely. The reason a lot of kids look and go, I want to be an actor, is because they like films.
Yeah.
And all they... but no one's taught them about films. Because what they might want to be is a writer or a runner or a cameraman or a lighting person or all these other things
Got it, I'm
but
glad.
But they just see it and go, I want to be an actor because that's all I know.
Yeah.
And things like the Brit School is going, look, there's this whole world, you could be a researcher.
I'm so glad you're saying that, because the whole part, the Department of Media, the path production gets completely written off of that Brit School. But music,
because the ones you hear about, Amy Winehouse, Adele, Kate, all these, you know,
we forget about. I mean, it's just as important that we've got lighting designers that are, you know, in charge of massive shows, and script writers and directors, producers, all that have come from that school as well. Just a really good techie, like, that's so valuable, that has learned from 14 how to properly mic and light a stage. That's amazing. That's ahead of your years.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Because
walking around, they're 14, they've got their gaffer tape in their pocket, like, all serious.
There was a guy on this film I just finished, and generally, me and this guy, Gus Khan, were blown away by him, because one of his main jobs was marking positions on the floor, but instead of his rolls of tape, he had a board, and he'd put out lines of tape on it. So each colour had about 10 lines on top of each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then at the end, he'd written, so red is Pip, blue is Guz. So he's got these pre-cut bits of tape that he's just going, bang, 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 bang. And it's all on this board. And we, again, a small thing like that, we were like, dude, this guy is next level. And it's like, it's those small things.
Absolutely.
But in general, a lot of those areas, it's a weird one to compare to mixed martial arts, but I'm obsessed with mixed martial arts. But the comparison is this, honestly, it makes sense. Stay with me.
I will, don't worry.
When the sport started off, it was a guy coming in from wrestling and learning stand-up, or a guy coming in from boxing and learning wrestling. And then about 5 years ago, because it got to a certain age, people were coming in who'd learned mixed martial arts. They'd learned specifically to go into that industry, rather than adapting. And it's similar in film and TV, for example, that people would be coming from the previous lighting they've done is in houses or whatever, or tech work is in houses or buildings, and they're suddenly on a film set. Whereas because of things like Brit School, it's like, right, no, you're going to train specifically for that and go into it.
I love
in,
that.
In that mindset.
It
you know?
Is like that. And I think they get a lot of... they get overlooked, you know, by all the kind of artists. But that's another thing. It teaches all the talent that's come from that school knows to thank everybody properly and understands that a show is not just one person, that it's a massive cargo of people that have put something together, and we all are valuable. And that's what that school teaches you, that you don't just do it on your own. You need somebody to stand at a door and take tickets. Everybody's important.
It's really good. It's positive rooting to grow up, that it's your mates are doing all those different jobs, because again, you're completely right. If you're doing your spoken word in Edinburgh, when you go on, there's someone who was probably there for 2-3 hours beforehand setting up the stage and will be there for 2-3 hours afterwards. But you're going to get up and do your thing. Afterwards, everyone's going to be in awe of you and praise you. And no one's going to know about that person who spent longer than you've spent on that actual thing. But they're just doing it for their art, and that's kind of the key. The same in TV, and again on bigger live shows as well. You think about a big tour and a Adele tour, the people who are there the day before building that whole stage and everything.
Oh,
and it's like,
it's enormous work, but
it's not for the praise, it's for the art of it and for the
completely
their own
and
expertise.
There's a massive season that happens at Brit School where they mix up everybody. Brilliant. And you've got production having to act for a bit, and we
amazing.
Have to do production for a bit, and I did makeup for a bit, stage makeup, and you mix us all up, so we get I did a music bit for a bit, so we're all basically getting our hands stuck in something else, feeling, God, actually it's really hard what they have to do. And I have so much respect. It's not easy to make someone like they've been stabbed. Appreciate their work. I had to sew a blood bag into a skirt, and when they fell, you know, blood would pour out. And I was like, no, this is really hard. And as much as they look at us, they think, God, you speak out loud. That's so scary. Yeah. But it's like, well, what you do is so scary. What if that blood bag doesn't pop?
There's nothing that makes you appreciate someone's work more than realizing it's something that you really don't want to do. You know, it's like, I don't want to have to do that. I'm so glad you're here to do that, because
I tried that for a week and it was a nightmare. Completely, it was absolute hell for me.
Completely.
So that's perfect.
I know, I perv over when the cleaner comes, I literally perv over her.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are a fucking G.
Man, this is the best. So what was your route at Brit School? Do you go in there knowing what you want to do, or do you go in there kind of going, right, here's loads of stuff?
No, you go in with a strand, like a major. So yeah, mine was theatre. And then you... I think you can kind of do like a major and then have like a thing that you want to do a little bit after that. But you have to have like a strand. So there's like media, production, dance, musical theatre, and music.
Yeah.
And then you can do like your exams as well. So I did English literature there as well. And they have a syllabus and stuff. And actually, their academic, they've always had a lot of... They've been slated for their academic side, saying, oh, you know, it's so much attention on this, that, you know, what are they doing academic-wise? But they've pulled up their socks as well with that too, and their teachers are remarkable.
But, I mean, even on that, it does my head in a bit, because it's different... It's variation, isn't it?
Of course.
It's not meant to be your maths and science school. That's the point of it. Most... There's thousands of schools that will focus on that and not focus at all or with any great level of expertise on the arts. So,
well, also
where's
the
damage in having one that's focusing on the arts?
They're actually teaching us the mate. I mean, I guess the biggest thing we learned from there is gratitude and to be respectful of everybody's platform and everybody's art and discipline. I think even if you end up leaving Brit School and you end up becoming, I don't know, working for a charity and you're in a big meeting, it teaches you to respect every single person around that table. You'll take that skill, and even if you just straight away leave that school and become a parent straight away, it helps you have empathy. You see the glass from every single point of view of every single person, because that's what that school does. They don't separate us. They don't put people on pedestals. Like, obviously there's, you know, we get mini Brit School celebrities. And that's even been weird for us, watching the people that Brit School celebrities now become working what someone would say is a normal job behind a desk. And they're thinking, God, when I was 18, everyone would look at me like I was a god.
Yeah.
And now I work in a bank.
Yeah.
And that's a big change for them as well. But I mean, that's like anything, isn't it? The most good looking boy in school who then becomes, you know, sitting by a pool melting.
And again, it's that thing of you hope beyond hope that they've found something that they're enjoying.
Of course.
Do you know
what I
mean? Rather than that
for.
Thing of you were meant to be this, then there's that pressure. It's again, it's similar at school. If you were the guy that was amazing at maths and then you're like, I don't really like maths that much.
Completely.
Then if people look and go, oh, he dropped off, he works in a shop now, and it turns out he works in a record shop and he loves it and it's his favourite. He wakes up every morning with a smile on his face. It's like, it's not failed.
What was so gorgeous as well about that school is money was just so bottom of the rung. Like,
brilliant.
They taught us that you don't drive for money, and actually you could get really in badly trouble if you sign wrong deals or you do things too stupid and you let your bank kind of lead you. And also about protection, we were really clued up on like royalties, and well, as clued up as we could be for kids when we listened, but we were definitely informed about that, about copywriting, about stealing stuff from other people's work. We were all posting our own work to ourselves when we were about, you know, 17, kind of copywriting ourselves, because the school made us do that. It made us be protective of our art.
I love that. I mean, I'm gonna go on to the kind of the Brit School celebrity moments type bit now, but I need to give a preface to it. On this podcast, I ramble on and have these conversations. I don't remember them that well, and they go out each week. I don't remember like what discussions I've had where, or like, for example, I'm not going to remember what we discussed on the record than what we were discussing like as I was setting up.
Yeah.
But I had someone tweet me the other day saying that about five times in the podcast over the last a year or two, I've made out that me and Adele were like best mates and go way back. It's like, we did a load of gigs together, I got on really well, we talked about doing a song together, we did the Ronson tour and stuff like that. So I love Adele dearly, but I'm never going to make out that we're, you know, friends from childhood. But you and Adele were as tight as they come, and my same was, I remember at the time that came out, and it being, that's about Dockers, that's
I
so
know,
cool
completely.
So how was that kind of
did amazing you meet? She's just my she's like another sister, I guess, or like, well, how would I describe it? It's like she's that fun cousin that used to come round and be like, because she does fit. It's a hybrid between friendship and and family. You know, my mum speaks to her, my family speak to her, separate to me. If we have a family thing, you know, everyone's included, and her mum's very important to me as well. I love her a lot. And watching what's happened, you know, has been obviously too much to even take in. If I tune into it, my brain could explode with pride. But also, everything I was just talking about, she is first and foremost a mum. That's what she is. And she's an amazing mum, an amazing friend, and an amazing smart woman.
I've loved seeing her. And I caught up with a Paloma the other day. And I said exactly the same. I love that both of them legitimately just walked away from everything for a bit when they had their kid. Because they're both people that I don't think are capable of covering anything up or biting their tongue. So, and knowing all my mates have had kids and how it can be the most beautiful and the most stressful and the most painful, and happiness and depression and all sorts of stuff in those, at least in those first few months,
completely.
It could be a roller coaster ride. It would have been huge. And me and Paloma are going to talk about it on the podcast soon. And now she's in the right place and mindset. But I was saying of her and of Adele, it's so good that they went, right, this isn't Adele or Paloma.
Yeah.
This is me personally, and I need to go and live my life and do that and not do 10 interviews and photo shoots and all this about it.
No, you just need to actually just be a person, be human. And Adele is amazing. I mean, I'm sure she won't mind me saying, but even just yesterday, you know, she's just dropped everything and got so involved in the tower in Notting Hill.
Yeah, of course.
She's helped. She's there on the site, literally talking to families, giving them what they need, comfort and helping when she can. And I'm just so proud of her. You know, that's something that she doesn't have to do.
Yeah.
And she does. And she just is so brave. And she understands, what's about empathy. She believes believes wholeheartedly in love. I know it sounds so cliche, she does. And she believes in compassion. And that's why she can relate to all these people. I think about, she genuinely did also work really hard. I lived with her for a few years as well, and she just is a complete night owl. She wouldn't sleep in the night. She's nocturnal.
Yeah.
And I'd wake up in the morning and she just had written Daydreamer or written, Chasing Pavements, in the night on a guitar. And she really is the real deal. She's that complete tortured artist that can get low. And
most of the conversations I had with her were in the middle of the night on MySpace, just rave, like she'd posted a new song at like 2 a.m.
Yeah,
and I'm the same up late, kind of like, this is amazing.
That's her. She dropped this kind of bit of blood into the pool, and then the sharks just came, boy.
How have you just done that?
Yeah, she really, and I love that. That's another thing, I guess, about what we all did as well was this kind of, you've lost your little fiddly twiddle.
My little thing, I was fiddling, I'm sorry. Yeah, go on.
We have like a kind of spontaneity and a relaxation with spontaneity. You know, it's like we don't feel threatened by the idea of making something. I'm going to give it a little show now.
Let's make something, and here it is.
Just here.
And I mean, that's an interesting point, and particularly on what you were speaking about there with the tower and all of this that's gone on recently, is when you get to a certain point of notoriety or fame, at points people forget that you're a human and want to do human things.
Of course,
so
they
there's
do.
Been numerous things. I've posted a few different bits over the months of people that are doing stuff, and people, there'll always be someone who's cynically going, or Lily Allen is the worst for getting this. She'll constantly be, she's speaking so much politically, and people will constantly be going, oh, it's to promote a new record, it's to keep her name up there and things like that. It's like, you're allowed to be a human as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people forget.
Oh, but if you don't say anything, you're in trouble as well. It's like, oh, it's easy for you. What are you going to do? Talk about your new record, but neglect, la, la, la. And it's like, how do you, that's just, trolls who put their head in pillows at night and think to themselves, well, did I do anything today? Yes, well, at least I gave blah, blah, blah a hard time.
What I loved about seeing Adele down there and talking to people was I saw it all seemed to be completely secondhand. It didn't seem, I mean, there wasn't any, here I am at this place, which again, I struggle hugely, although I've just said that, I struggle hugely with people who are helping, but helping in a way that makes them
glorify them,
look like
a
saviour. And again, it's I don't talk about it much because I'm aware that that's my own issue, because at the end of the day, the help is getting done.
Yeah.
So regardless if I'm seeing it as cynical, fuck it, the people need help and they're getting helped.
Completely.
Whether I'm getting angry about it or not, it doesn't change anything.
Exactly.
But that's what struck me with that, was a lot of different people I saw down there just, who literally clearly just saw it happen, and got on the train or got in their car or got in a cab and went, right, I need to go and help in some way.
But even on a smaller, more personal level, you know, she looks after, she has such compassion. And yeah. I feel, you know, to be, that's what I feel, I don't know how she does both, because to be almost in the way that she's so strung out and she sees herself like in that way, she's just a working, grafting mum. And when she's yeah. not working, she's looking after her son and yeah. being the best at everything, basically, yeah. which I knew. And she's an amazing friend, and I love it, I'm so proud, like just so proud.
Adele is the only person I can see recreating something that was, I felt, was a unique experience that I saw a little while ago, and it was when Kate Bush came back and did that short run of shows.
I went along.
Oh,
that blew my mind.
Amazing things I've ever seen. But what blew me away the most was she stopped in the peak of her fame to just go and be a mum.
Yeah.
And then had just been, let me remove the word just, had been a mum for 20 or 30 years or whatever it was, and not been Kate Bush.
Yeah.
She'd been a mum.
Yeah.
And the beauty was watching the start of the gig, and it is kind of slightly awkward and slightly mum. It was like I took my mum. I went with my mum, and I was in tears at points because I was like, that's a mum up there.
But such a mum. I've forgotten,
to
us
it's Kate Bush, but it's a mum with her son. And by the end, it was full Kate Bush. She'd become more relaxed. It was this amazing thing. And I thought, it felt at the time, that can never be recreated, because no one will ever walk away from, because of what we've built fame to be, no one will ever walk away at such a point and then come back again. But Adele is the one person that I can see being
100%.
Bloody-minded enough and independent enough to go, I'm done with this.
She really couldn't go to that. And I said, rang her after that show, and I said to her, you've got to get your ass down, whatever you have to do, to go and watch that show. She
did it. That was
insane.
I went on the last week or so.
She needed it. Like, yeah. She was like, I'm so inspired. Like,
yeah.
Because I think for that exact reason, I mean, yeah. Remarkable. The show was remarkable, that aside.
Yeah.
And the bravery of it. I mean, we could talk about this for the whole podcast.
It was so good.
How do you make a helicopter being a show? Well, Kate Bush can do it.
Yeah.
But exactly that reason, the fact that her son was the one that made, you know, that said, you need to do something. And
it didn't come across as cheesy or forced or anything.
Absolutely,
it was this beautiful thing. And it was like, it genuinely, I said it, I was the same. I came out of it, and there was a couple of people I knew who were big Kate Bush fans, and I was like, look, there's 3 days left. If you're about, I'll find you a ticket. I'll buy you one and all this kind of, because like, you've got to experience
this,
because
it's beautiful.
It did feel unique. But that's what I got from Adele, kind of. Yeah. I can completely see her. And Paloma, maybe. I think Paloma loves show business too much, so it might be tough. But again, I could see there are people I could see going,
as well, and they're businesswomen. Like, that's what I love about them so much. And all mums everywhere that are working really hard and being a mum, like, just hats off. Like, it's not easy. Like, even I'm not even talking about physically managing that, but also find that space in your heart and your brain to take all of that on.
Yeah.
Insecurity in both levels, you know, all it takes is, it could take worrying if your show's going to sell any tickets to then a kid throwing custard in your face and saying, your little kid being like, I don't like you.
Yeah.
That's, both are going to break your heart.
Completely.
And you've still got to do both with a smile on your face.
Yeah. It's not, it's mind blowing. So anyway, let's get back on track. Did you, at that point, when you're leaving Brit School and you're leaving with Adele and Kate Nash and some of these people who seem to have their path very much figured out, did you feel any pressure or stress at that point of like, what is my path and what is my exact route?
Definitely. And I think, like, it can be easily bamboozled. I mean, we've both seen it. You've had kind of taken your alternative own route as well, and you can feel a bit confused, you know, at times when you're, I don't know, like on a really obvious, really, I know this is going to sound ugly, but when you're, you know, 17, 18 and your friends are getting sent big packages from designers of clothes and stuff. I mean, I'm not a materialistic person, but I do like fashion, and you feel weird, like, why are they getting like big presents from, I'm doing my art too, but it's different in books,
and that's it.
It's a different world.
It's a weird one, because I can see how there would be, in a way, more pressure on you because of what you've gone through there. There's more expectation. I kind of was lucky to never feel that, because I've always felt, well, no one was ever expecting me to be here. And in every situation, I'm like, this is a surprise for all of us, including me. So This is a delight. So it's always felt comfortable drifting from world to world because it's like I've never. But when you've gone to something like Brit School at the point where it's blowing up of people coming out of it being huge, there is that extra pressure. So
well, it's just fun. I'm just so not to be cheesy, but I'm just so grateful that my all that work I felt like I did as a child, all those writing books that I have literally as tall as me stacked up, that they saved my bacon really, and that was my, they were my first love. Writing is my first love, poetry especially. And I kind of went around the houses at Brit School thinking, am I going to be an actor? Am I going to be that? And then it wasn't till it got right to the end of Brit School and a few of my friends wanted to audition and they were like, there's no female parts anywhere for us to read monologues. And I don't want women to just be playing a queen after queen, stroking a fat king's head going, you can do it, you can do it, you know, crying and being heartbroken. It's got to be other roles. And a few of my friends got into drama school with some of the speeches that I wrote, and I thought, you know what, this is what I know, it's in my blood, writing words, that's how I speak, and that's what, in every way, metaphorically too, that's what I know. So been a different route for me, but I think in a way, I remember one of my friends, Peggy Sue Girls actually, Rosa, saying to me, you know, it's one thing to be able to play on stage. We all understand that. We understand what it's like for someone to be on stage. But she was like, I've never met anyone that's had a book published.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until then, because I was 19 when I got my first book published. So I thought, oh, yeah, maybe that is pretty actually okay. Like, maybe that is okay.
Again, it's going...
And the success is small. It's different.
Yeah, but it's
different.
It's going back to that same thing of it's as much, if not more, work, but not that immediate end of a song applause. If you know what I mean, like with music, you instantly get that and everyone's saying, that's great. Even if you've completed your book, people still have to go away and read it.
Yeah.
And that can take ages. Yeah. So it's like...
Oh, completely.
No one's... I'm never going to get that big moment of well done. So it has to be a personal joy. It has to be a personal achievement. I've completed that. I've handed it in. It's submitted. I'm happy. Do you know what I mean? It has to be an internal personal
that's
one rather
exactly
than
what it is.
The and praise.
It is exactly that. And the problem is, in some ways, is it's you can't quantify what a talent is, I guess, with words, because everybody uses them. Everybody thinks they've got a book in them, which they have.
And
everybody has a story to tell, which is interesting, which they do. Whereas, you know, you see someone sing on stage and you're like, "You have, I could never sing like you. You know, that is something I can't do." Whereas... everyone can talk, everyone can tell a story, everybody. So it's like, what quantifies what is, who separates who should be published and who shouldn't?
For me, I think one of the most underrated and underpraised skills is actually doing stuff. Which sounds stupid, because you'll have people go to art exhibitions and go, I could have done that. It's like, you didn't know, did you? And that's it. It's like, I could have done this, I could have done... Yeah, but you didn't.
I think you've closed that complete chapter. I think that's exactly the best answer. I say to... The other day, I was speaking to someone, they went, because I do these Guardian masterclasses, and someone said, how do you be a writer? It's right.
Yeah.
That's literally it. Right. Actually, if you write, then you're a writer.
And it sounds... It's troublesome, because that's such an easy answer, an easy sentence. Try doing it.
Exactly.
Try actually completing it. I remember the first time I've just had a script I'm working on, option,
well,
but
that's
I remember the
wicked.
First time I was saying to my mate Kelly, who's a script writer, I've got this idea, and I was like, it's amazing, I've got it all planned out. And she was like, well, try and have a drink. Like, it was in an August, you see, an August, it was several years back. And she was like, well, when you're back over in LA in November, try and have a draft for me. I'm like, by November? It's like, mate, I've got, all I need to do is sit down, it'll take a couple of days to write this out. That script I've still never written, and that was like 4 or 5 years ago.
That was in August.
And then 5 or 6 different scripts since then, I've finally actually sat down and written one. But again, genuinely, 4 or 5 years after that initial, mate, I'd do that in a month.
This is the thing.
And then, but it's not
and
as simple
as
that.
You want to, but that's because your experience of writing is when you want to write something, it falls out of you. You don't even have control. Like, that's 100%. The way to time travel is you literally, like, where did that day go? Because when you've got something that's it's urgent, I'll be when I'm lost in a scene, I'm writing something sad or scary. If my heart is not thumping out of my chest and I don't feel like I want to cry, something's going wrong.
Yeah.
So you should. If it feels like a chore and an effort, that's not the call. That's not the call for you.
But it's such a tough balance as well, because you can spend your whole life saying, I'm waiting until I'm inspired. And so it's a balance, right, of work ethic and inspiration.
Oh, I'm
going to
get my new laptop. Did Shakespeare have a laptop? No.
Yeah, honestly, I kicked myself when I finally sat down to write a short script, because I'd spent so long going, well, the fact is, I don't know how the script writing program works. So I'm going to have to spend some time figuring that out. And then I opened it up and it's bloody, it does itself. It writes it itself. But I'd spent so long going, well, there's no point in starting now because I need to learn the program and then I'll start on the script. So it was like,
I don't really like you saying that actually on this, because I think I've been going to everyone, oh, I've just got my head around final draft. So like, it's taken me a few days. So
you see,
you basically just outed me.
You see, I use one called, I think it's called Fade Out or Fade to Black, which is similar to Final Draft. But again, they're both, it's so intuitive.
Final Draft's actually really hard. So yeah, I just want to say that
it's
right
really
now.
Tough. So
and I've actually cracked it. So,
so how was it? Like, how do you feel it took you finding your voice as a writer? Because your first bits were poetry collections, right? Or
yeah.
There's been a variation along the way.
But they're all the same. I always get asked this, but I approach everything in the same way, the same what I was talking about earlier. If I'm doing a drawing or a piece of art or a collage or whatever I'm making, and I've just written a film as well, a short film with my brother.
Amazing.
I attack everything in the same way, I don't think. And I've been doing songwriting as well, helping with lyrics with artists.
Awesome.
And everything.
Because your brother's done some really good music videos
he
and stuff, hasn't he?
Right?
I'm sure
really
I've seen some of his
he
stuff
has.
Over
He's done Ray Black
years.
And Georgia Smith.
Yeah,
he's done some amazing stuff.
Amazing.
But we're all storytellers, all of us. And I feel if I approached it differently, I'd feel like I'd lose what makes me. And, and I feel sometimes when I first tried to write a children's book, for example, I sort of changed my writing style, like, good morning, children.
Yeah.
What a time. Yeah. You know, and I was like, wait a minute. Just because you're a child doesn't mean you automatically have no personality at all.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, when I came at it from a different way and just wrote how I write, just without the swear words, suddenly I got offers and I was like, they want to publish you because they want you to
because
write
of
like
your
you.
Voice. Not again. Yeah. And that can be such a mistake of going, oh, I need to write, I like that. It's like, no, they've already got that.
Yeah.
That already exists.
Completely.
So.
Exactly. And when it comes to even writing, you know, at the moment writing play, for example, I think, oh, it's got to be very serious now because it's a play and every line needs to be pregnant with feeling. And then I'm thinking, they probably asked me to write a play because they just want to translate what I've done in a book or my spoken words, for example, and catapult that to the stage.
Completely.
Why are you trying to be somebody else? You know, why are you... And then, you know, just that's what you've got to do. And whenever I get asked as a guardian about writing, so you have to speak like yourself all the time. When you're talking to your friends, when you're writing a text message, when you're writing an email, write like you. You know, always speak, write how you speak.
I mention them all the time, but I think Michaela Cole and Donald Glover are both huge examples of that at the moment, where particularly with Michaela Cole with Chewing Gum, that was her one... a woman show. It was her spoken word show.
Yeah.
And then they went, let's turn that into a TV show and just do it exactly as you did it. Do you know what I mean? Not kind of go, oh, we need to tweak this and change this. And what made it jump out was you watched it like, oh, wow, that's not like most TV shows. But that's what's good about it. They've not gone,
tone.
Let's turn it into this thing. It's like, no, it's still just a regular girl talking to... Like, truthfully, and Donald Glover with Atlanta as well. I've mentioned it a ton of times. It's one of my series of the year, but I couldn't tell you what the story is. It's just because of the tone of it and just the style. It's like, it's so engaging and exciting and new.
And you fall for it.
Yeah.
And it's so true when you see, you know, you were saying earlier about artists that are relatable. It's like when you see someone that is your species, you just feel instantly drawn to them. Like it's like, yes, you're doing art, but you're like me. And that's the most amazing moment.
It's great because I found it with you and with Polar Bear and with several others. And again, like with Kate Nash and all these, where I'd watch and it wouldn't be a case of I could see myself performing something with them or this, that. It's like I could see myself spending an evening in a pub with them and it'd be enjoyable.
That's exactly what it
not,
is.
Not in a... like I had Saul Williams on the podcast, and he's absolutely amazing, but I felt so much pressure because I'm so in awe of him. He's not someone I particularly looked at and thought, I could just hang out with him in the pub, because I'd feel I'm needing to up my game and all this. It has to be this intellectual conversation, whereas it feels like, again, Kate Tempest was another one that is like, I could just hang out with him and never talk about anything artistic.
Yeah, because Kate, I feel she's... how long has she been going on? You know, she's tried the music angle for so long and everyone's gone, Kate, don't you understand what you're top of your game in spoken word? Like, don't do the music. Everyone's been saying that to her for so long. She's like, got this twinkle in her eye, like, no, music's my heart. That's what she did at Brit School.
Yeah.
You know, no, trust me. And when she hasn't changed anything, she's still telling the exact same stories, being exactly the same woman, and smashing it. And I'm just like, you know what? She's just believed in herself.
She's just done Brixton Academy.
I know.
Little Kate Tempest doing Brixton Academy. I love it. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. But she's the real deal.
So did you feel, just speaking of that, of that pressure, I guess, when something clicks, it felt to me from the outside that Darcy Burdock was the one that seemed to everyone, it made sense to everyone.
Yeah.
Did you feel then, oh, right, I'm a young adult writer now. That's what I have to do. There's now, I've built the audience. And again, in a, we were speaking of motherhood or whatever, but you instantly had a lot of children relate to that character and therefore relate to you. So did you then feel, right, I've kind of got responsibility now to continue along this route?
Just so everyone knows, I really like alcohol. So just making sure, parents, when you come to my readings, you're going to see Instagram pictures where I have been drunk in the past.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that, you know, it's kind of like, do I have to clean myself and be like, you know, and I've shared the stage of the incredible Jacqueline Wilson a few times.
Right, wow.
Shared from the same biscuit packet as her, so...
Amazing.
And she is just as... I feel exactly the same, you know, just talking about people that we idolise. She's my version of that. And I think, God, I need to brush up and be really perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the children... Now I know the children's world. They're normal, thank God. And all I'm looking for all the time is a pop star that wears a cardigan and likes tuna pasta bake and is normal, you know, and is not, you know, slagging off her ex-boyfriend who's talking about important things like mortgages that she's actually scared about.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like everyone in the children's world, they're just... actually are normal people, and these are who's writing books for kids, and I'm so glad about that, you know. It's like the young adult industry is blowing up. It's so exciting. They remind me of 15 rated films that are 15, because it's like, because you can't go there, you can like almost go there. It's like when you close your eyes on the ghost train and you can hear these howls and your brain's thinking, what on earth is going on in that
completely
scenario?
And
it's such an itchy, scratchy grey area that we get to embed ourselves in and literally leave like dot dot dots on the page where a child's brain can go vroom.
It's the beauty of literature as well, is their brains already having to be in that mode, if that makes sense. If you're watching a film, I mean, horrors are one thing, but if you're watching a film, generally what you see is all you're taking in, broadly, I guess, is that's kind of generally what's happening. Whereas a book, because you're having to engage your mind in that much of a manner anyway,
do some work.
That when you leave those kind of open areas, it's like it runs off down that
path.
And
we're allowed to do that, you know. If you're reading an adult thriller, you know, you want it to go there. We want blood. We want everything. But we can do that. I mean, you were saying about, like, do I see myself as a young adult writer? Like, I'm almost so... I was so grateful when I get adult work still. Like when someone asks me to do something, you know, grown up, I feel like, oh, thank you for letting me have a chance. But, you know, but what I need to remember is with kids, you know, I would totally be up for seeing Jacqueline Wilson write an adult play. Like, but I was saying to you earlier when you sat down here, it's like, I love it that you do everything, you know. It's like, why do we have to just stick to one discipline?
It's key to have that variation. I was discussing this with Doc Brown the other day on the podcast.
Love Doc Brown.
He was saying how, and we kind of summed it up as, it's all dependent.
Well, he did that kids show, didn't he?
Yeah. And he did his book, his kids book, The Bear. And again, it's all a case of when you got on the train. Like, if you got on the Laura Dockwell train at Darcy Burdock, well, you're a young adult writer. If you got on at seeing her drunk doing crude poetry at an event, then you're like, why is she allowed to write for kids? Do you know what I mean? It's about what point you go on. It's not, you will have people, and J.K. Rowling will have this, that when she tries to write outside of Harry Potter, be like, but are you going to do any more? You're going to do any more Harry Potter?
Completely.
Though it's like, well, I've done that and it's still there.
Yeah.
Like, it's not been erased from time, but you can do these other things and have that.
It is funny when the Dockers MC spoken word fans, though, come to the children's events.
Yeah.
It's like you've got like 9-year-olds and then you've got these like 30-year-olds kind of sitting there like trying to, you know, queue up with kids.
Yeah.
But
I love it.
I love it. And I think also, the kid, you know, already the, from Darcy Burdock book one, these kids are now teenagers. Like, yeah, they're already 18 and now they can go back and read Mistakes in the Background,
yeah,
and enjoy that as an adult. So yeah, I just kind of feel my aim is to have like a book for every grown up in a stocking, for every, yeah, family member in a stocking on a, yeah, on a fireplace.
Yeah, I love Christmas. That. So, well, I mean, you spoke of the excitement of having younger siblings and being able to craft them or teach them your ways and put, mm-hmm, them. So how's it been getting to a point where you're going into schools and working with kids and teaching with kids? Because I think, again, it's a very specific skill and art form, and a lot of people don't realise that. A lot of poets or writers will have a level of success and think, oh, I can go and teach children. It's a skill. Like, I turn down a lot of schoolwork because it's not a skill I've had time to learn yet, but I'll always recommend people like Polar Bear or Kate Tempest because they're amazing at relating with kids. As how have
I
you found
you'd
that?
You'd be amazing at it, but it's natural to me. Like, I know I'm very maternal and I love children. I always have. And I used to work at this really funny place called Gymboree.
Yeah.
So kids, working with kids is not scary to me, intimidating at all. But what is scary is going to a school, scratching at a surface, getting everyone excited about words, and then it being 3 o'clock and
having
being
to walk
like,
away.
Oh, that's it. I'm never, yeah, going to see you again. Or getting that kid that's never read out loud to read out loud, and everyone go, ah, and then be like, what do I do now?
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And I'm being
now,
like,
it's gone.
I'm so sorry. Like, you're in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And I'm here, and I also can't email you. You're a kid. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So,
it's tough. Yeah, we can't. I can't
and that's
be
it.
Individually mentoring kids around
and
the country in a weird way.
Every single week. Exactly. Yeah. It happens every week. And that's the hardest bit, is wishing you could kind of do more. But it's just like, I mean, I went to the most amazing school, actually, near you, Haroldwood. Is that too far from
you? Yeah, that's right.
This head teacher's taken over and turned this playground into, I mean, I'll show you pictures afterwards, but like, he's made a whole band, like instruments set up out of recycled parts.
Amazing.
A tree house that wraps around a tree, a big open art play where kids can just get messy, a little mini Jurassic Park, sand pit, swamp.
I love it.
Forest setups for storytelling. And
wow.
And then he goes, and watch this, gets his iPhone. Music just blares out of these speakers that are hidden in the woods. And I'm like, there are people doing it. And
yeah,
that's the moment when you think, I'm so lucky to be a part of this.
As I say, that must be hugely inspirational to get to go and see these things. Because again, I would never have known that existed until you've said that.
Yeah.
So the fact that there are these schools that, yeah, have still got that passion, and particularly as it's a time where our school system gets shit on a lot, and rightfully so in many places. It can be dry, it can be test-driven and achievement grade-driven and all that,
mm-hmm,
kind of,
mm-hmm,
thing. But it's exciting, or it must be exciting to get, because I'd imagine the kind of places that you're invited to are going to be those ones, are going to be the ones that are trying to do something a bit more and trying to be.
And the teachers
creative
that are working hard are just amazing. I went to speak at City Hall with Sadiq, and I read a poem and did, because I've got a new poetry book coming out.
Yes.
So I went there and met all these amazing head teachers that were just like, and the amount of, just from doing that one poem, that and that one little bit I spoke about, got like 20 school visit offers just
amazing
off the end of that. And they're just passionate teachers that are just love what they do and,
yeah,
genuinely want to improve a child's life.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that's really when you realise, God, my job is not just within the pages of this work. That is not the conversation. That's just the start, especially with a book like Darcy, where I'm talking about the imagination, about being yourself, encouraging kids to be themselves. It's like an early stab at feminism, Darcy,
yeah,
Burdock.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really cool to ride a BMX, actually. So
yeah,
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But without being, you know, just coaxing it gently, without forcing it. And my job is not just within those pages. It's out, you know.
So
it's the dialogue that you're...
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because one of the first things you learn in the music industry is, as a kid, you think of like an album coming out. That's it. That's the big point. And then you learn that that's the start point. Like, most albums,
it's,
I feel, are finished after a couple of tours. Even,
yeah,
the fact that I always remember hearing one of our songs in a shop or something and going, I'd forgotten it sounds like that, because it's developed so much over touring,
mm,
that album version was just the starting point. That's to get it all out there. It's finished to a point, and then it's everything that comes after that. And that's
I love that.
Similar with a book, but it's hard to imagine because you put so much time and so much of your heart into completing a book that it should feel that that's it when it's done. But yeah, it's not. It's getting out there and explaining it more and learning the characters things, more.
You know, when I'm, exactly, you probably have this in your job, but, you know, I'll be speaking about the work on stage and the kid will ask me a question or I'll think of something and I'm like, oh, she should have said
she
that.
Should have done
Darcy
that.
Should
yeah.
have said that. Like, but that's the wonder of being able to tour and work live is yeah. being able to fill in all those gaps.
You went and taught my cousin or gave a talk to my cousin. How was she? It was. You messaged me about it because you said,
oh God.
My cousin's Sophie at Brit School, I think it was.
Oh
and you were
God,
like,
yeah. this was
there's a girl
ago.
Claiming that she's your cousin, but I'm not sure it's your. So can you.
This was ages
this
ago,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
no.
It was a long
suddenly
while
I was thinking, when was this?
Was this recently?
Yeah,
no, it was a long while back.
It
but
was.
Yeah, again,
yeah,
it was
she was
amazing
good
to hear
it.
That.
She was so proud of you as well. And I was like, this is actually my spotlight moment.
Yeah,
so
can we not,
why are you bringing up your famous cousin right now?
Can we not cloud this? But how is it to go back to places like Brit School? And because that's...
Forgot about that.
I guess
that
the most relatable at points, because that's somewhere you've actually been. So you will know all the more what is going to click and what is going to work. If you know what I mean. Like, it's tough going, as you said, to a random school somewhere for one day because you don't know what will continue on. Whereas if you're going back to somewhere where you know the framework a little, I'd imagine you may be able to kind of, even if you are there for one day, know what is going to set them on the right path for what is available to
even
them.
Even the receptionist from Brit School, a guy called Dan, he literally tweets us all the time. He supports everything we
Amazing.
Do still to this day. Like, Dan's like, big up, blah, 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 blah. Like,
yeah.
always. Or he'll message one of us being like, blah, 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 have you seen what blah, blah, blah is doing? Blah, blah, blah. Like, amazing. He's a receptionist. Like, it's incredible.
I love it.
What I'm so especially an advocate for there at Brit School, I think, is I went in there to do one thing and I've come out doing not completely another, but a slight diversion.
Yeah.
And it's to say, you know, there are... These are not just because there's six strands. You don't have to find a job in one of these six strands. There are so many cracks between everything. You know, you can squeeze into a crack.
Yeah.
And if you are, I mean, you've made it anyway just by being alive. But if you've, if you're doing what you want to do in whatever form, you're making it. And that's all that school is to do, is to encourage you to think for yourself and fall, you know. And I love people so much, Scroobius. I could quite easily fit into any job because I love humans so much, and I would write when I get home. Like the fact that I've been given this chance, I feel in debt. I'm never going to sit back in my chair and go, I've had a few books now and some of them, some people know who they are. So my work is done.
Yeah,
like, I'm constantly onto not just the next thing, but the next, the next, the next. I've got 18 projects on right now.
Amazing.
And I adore them all equally.
I love it.
Some of them fight with each other and sometimes it's hard, but, I never ever want, there's no bigger fear I have in the world than boredom.
Yeah.
And I don't see any spare minute as a minute of, oh, I'm just going to put my feet up. That's why I don't have a TV.
Yeah.
Because I just want to live and drain every second out of every second.
I think it's an underrated message, and I've answered it before online, and it sounds flippant when people say, so what's your biggest motivation? And half the time it will be boredom. So I've got some time to fill, and I want to fill it. The most enjoyable way to fill it is create something that
and you
I'm excited and proud
about yourself,
of.
Do you? If you've been, if you could, everyone could lie on the sofa, have a nap, look through Instagram.
And again, everyone can, and that's fine. You need that as well every now and then.
Of course, you know. But you could spend. And you know what? This is that what I love about art is that it doesn't start and stop with the making of your art. It's also just talking to someone you haven't talked to before, walking a different way you haven't walked, and going to this art gallery that everyone's talking about. You think, oh, I don't know, and doing something different. That's engaging, and that's joining the community, part of the conversation. That's where inspiration comes from, and that's going to shake up your head and make your work better. So I feel it's. I think you've got to. You could. There's plenty of time to sleep.
Yeah. And again,
it's not now.
It's wonderful because it is an incredibly lucky area to be in. Anything that's storytelling is because I genuinely go into the cinema. I can see that as work, and it's tough at points because you'll be watching a really good film and it'll give you an idea. And I had this at The Fringe a lot. I love The Fringe, but half the shows I'd be like, that's made me think of something completely unrelated, but it's just spawned this little idea, and then I can't concentrate on that show because
I'm
like, I need to write this down and get this going. So that's kind of, again, it's lucky that we can go, I've not had a day off this week. I've seen three plays, I've been to the cinema 4 times.
It's yeah, like exactly.
Really hard week. Been working really Absolutely. Hard. But still it is. It's still that focus.
Yeah. And but, you know, I agree. And I think it's important what you said as well about, you know, allowing yourself time to rest and for wellness and mindfulness. But and they're doing that in schools now as well. You know, they yeah. all have mindfulness now.
I love
all
that.
Kids, primary school kids, which I love. They have reading half an hour every, the whole school reading. Brilliant. You go to the reception, it's silent.
Brilliant.
And everybody's reading. The gardener, the caretaker, I the nurse. Oh, everyone's
wow.
reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful. It's crystal. You've never yeah. heard of school. It's ghostly.
Yeah.
We need that too. But I feel, don't you enjoy a rest so much more when you've earned that rest?
Yeah,
and completely. I'm not saying you need to be flat out on your back, but I'm just saying, listen to that little you in that I was talking about earlier at the beginning that says, if you want to do something, you are in charge. Only you can do that. No one's going to make yeah. that happen for you. But you have to look back and think, you know what, even if it doesn't happen, I did everything I could. Don't yeah. just rest and put your feet up and think, you know, it's going to happen for me. You've got to do it, and you can.
And again, it genuinely, even on a selfish level, it feels amazing. It feels amazing to do that. If you know you've done all you can, then even if
you, can
if you don't get it, you can go, man, I did so
exactly.
much for that.
Exactly.
It is what it is. But I think also, I mean, I will wrap things up because we're on about 70 minutes. But I think it's really important or what you were saying there about being a kind of almost a role model to say you can deviate off path, you can go in different directions. Because I think, again, the whole careers advisor type thing at school, I know it's set up to give you some guidance, but it's also set up in many ways to give you something to fall short of. You know, if from an early age I want to be this, then when you're not that, as we were saying at the start, if you're the cool kid at school or the idolised one, there's things to fail on. And teaching people that not doing what you maybe wanted to do at this point isn't failure. As long as you're doing something you want to do, it's not failure.
That's the bottom line, isn't it? And I think people have got the wrong attitude. They think that they tangle up work and art and money. You know, it's like, I always think it's funny when... I think it's Justin Bieber says in one of his songs, he talks about his job, you know, yeah. he sings his job, and we all know his job is Justin Bieber, and it kind of throws you out of the
yeah.
world of his fiction. And it's yeah. like, yeah. wait a minute, are you Justin Bieber? Are you an actor of Justin Bieber? And
yeah.
this is your job? Or is your job your art?
It's
and, but at the end of the day, that is his job. He's an yeah. artist, and completely have to hail that. I feel your salary does not have anything to do with the quantity of your art
mm-hmm.
at all. They're different yeah. things that we think. Oh, I always get asked this question: how much money at schools? How much money do you get? You know, to be a writer, not much. Like, writing is not much money.
Yeah.
You don't do it for money. You do it because you love it. And anyone that's making a penny out of writing or their art in general,
yeah.
you're a success.
100%.
You're a success.
Yeah.
And even if you know, you make a greeting card and you sell it for £1, you've done that.
Like, no.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And again, it's exactly that. It is knowing that it's a success just to be there. Like, I've had a couple of acting gigs that have come in that they've said at the start, it's not a very well paying one, but it's this and that. And I'll be sitting there thinking, like, mate, I've worked in factories, I've worked on vans, I've worked on all sorts
yeah.
of things. It's like,
yeah.
you're paying me to go and
yeah.
have fun and learn off these amazing people and essentially play. I mean, that sounds
and
like it's cheapening it, but still,
true.
It's like, that's
it's
amazing.
True.
It's like,
every single bit of clothes that you've got on your back,
yeah.
you've paid for out of your art.
Yeah, completely.
And that is such an amazing thing.
Genuinely, every time I have one like that, I do think, and I shouldn't be saying this out loud because it will drive all my fees down, but I genuinely always... sit there and think, joke's on you, because I'd be doing this for free. like I'd be here for free, particularly I'm working with these people, it's a couple of months out of my time, I'd come and do that for free. So when they're saying, here's what we'll pay you and all this,
yeah,
it's like, mate,
I know, it's amazing. It really is.
But yeah, so I mean, let's round things up. What's ahead? You got a poetry collection coming out. You're going to be
yeah.
in Edinburgh, aren't you? I saw you doing
Yeah, I am. I've got a new book coming out called My Mum's Growing Down,
yes.
which is all about... Because I feel like in children's books, as a mum always gets a massive stick. Dad's mm-hmm. always the funny, clumsy, silly one.
Yeah, and mum's always mum.
Be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, that's... Everyone's home is different.
Yeah.
Not everyone has a mum. Not everyone
yeah.
has two parents. You know, we've got a completely amazing mixture of everybody, which is what I love. And basically it's poems about how brilliant mums are, basically. Amazing. And how it's not easy to be one all the time. Yeah. Based mostly around my own mum.
Yeah.
It's with Faber and Faber, and it comes out in August.
Amazing.
And then I'm going to go to Edinburgh and read some poems, which will be so... I haven't done poems for about 8 years, 7 years.
That's it. Like, I saw that and I was like...
On stage.
I was worried that I'd missed... Do you know what I mean? It's always tough when... Because I'll have people... come up to me I've not seen in ages, and... When you're in your own world, you're aware of everything. It's not rude that there's people who aren't. And I'll have people come and go, so are you still doing stuff? And it'll be like, there'll be a little bit of you going,
oh,
yeah, I'm doing great, actually, but thanks for hanging. But again, but it's real.
Still doing the books?
Yeah.
Yeah, just walking to Waterstones.
But again, like my argument, I was saying this the other day, is Ed Sheeran's a great example. And he's a nice kid. He used to come to a lot of our shows early on.
I really like him, actually.
Yeah, but he's got, say, 32 million or whatever Twitter followers. That means there's several billion people who don't follow him. So, again, there's several billion people who aren't going to be aware, yet he's huge. So
he's huge.
To ever have that feeling that people should know what you're doing and what you're up to... It's no just way. An illusion.
Absolutely
it's a fiction.
Not. And even my own best friends think, they always say to me, they're like, I can't keep up. I have to write things on the wall just so that I can keep up with them. You know, it's like, how do you... But it'll be really nice. I mean, as soon as I read poems out again, anyway, I think this is like... this is what I did since I was three, four, you know. I just ran my first poetry masterclass at the Day at the Garden. I was thinking, I can't do this. Like, children's ones I've been doing for ages, but I was like... I can't do this. What qualifies me to be a poet anymore? And I'm like, as soon as I do it, I'm like, oh no, this is like, it's like this. Telling me how to have brown hair.
Yeah.
It's doing a masterclass on that. I live it. Like I know how to do it. So really excited for that. And my publishers have really just let me be really brave. And I mean, to be with Faber, I feel really like a bit like you, like I need to kind of show up wearing like really posh, smart shoes and a little briefcase
completely.
And a beret. But again, they want you for yourself, isn't it? That's what they want you for.
Exactly that. So where can people keep up to date on everything that's
it's probably Twitter, but I'm going to have a brand new website, actually, for My Mum's Growing Down with some poetry videos for schools. Because I think that's what I realise kids love poems. They just love poems. Kids love poems and they love words and they love... So I think a little visual for them, and they're going to go to schools and do all that. And,
amazing.
Yeah.
I guarantee, I don't know why it came to mind, it's because you were thinking of mums, but I guarantee, because my mum tunes into the podcast, I guarantee you're going to get an email asking you to come and do some stuff at Thurrock Libraries, because she does get a lot of her booking ideas from my podcast, Cheeky Cow, but she will, like, there'll be off one, she's like... I've emailed this person that was on to see if they want to come and do a reading. So, you'll get... That's
when you were like, where can they keep up with your stuff?
Yeah.
You're like, Mum, did you hear that, Mum?
So go on Twitter and on the new website that's got videos.
And your mum, I think she's probably growing down, isn't she?
Yeah, completely, completely. Anyway, well, thank you very much.
So
it's
nice
been amazing
to see you
to catch
again.
Up. Thank
so
you.
Nice.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Scroobish Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go, that was Laura. As you can tell, we were both incredibly excited to have a bit of a catch-up. It was lovely to catch up with her. Yeah, I need to get more people on from back in the day. I've had Gemma on and Laura. Me and Kate Nash have said that we're going to do a little podcast at some point. So we'll get more and more on. And have more and more little chatty chats. That's it for this week. As I mentioned earlier, it's Saturday, the 22nd of July. So this coming Saturday, come down to the book club. You can come and have a photo booth session with me from 8 p.m. If you miss that from 9 p.m, it's just a club night. It's a fiver to get in. It's my most fun evening of the month every time we do it. So I'll be getting drunk and playing some songs. We've got amazing DJs and amazing guests. So come on down to that, hang out, celebrate my birthday and enjoy yourselves. Oh, also, Hardcore Listing Live. That is August 10th. If I'm about, I'm going to be part of that. If not, it's still going to be an amazing night. I think they've got about 10 tickets left, so swoop quickly on that Hardcore Listing Live. I'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.